Good evening. Welcome to the latest emergency edition of the Trinity Terms podcast. This is the first emergency podcast since the last emergency podcast, and that was on the 28th of October, when the night after Brendan Rodgers had resigned from self-control. We've got quite a few things to talk about tonight, but I'll give a little history lesson to begin with. Back in season 2003-2004, Celtic had a turnover of £67 million. They scooshed the league, did three good Champions League matches, Bayern Munich, Lyon and Anderlecht. Narrowly lost out. That was a horrific night in Lyon. And then in the UEFA Cup, they beat Tbilisi, they beat Barcelona, then they lost out to Villarreal in the last day. During that year, 2003-2004, they appointed in October a chief executive called Peter Lowell. You'd barely know he existed, but back then, the chief executive's pro rata salary was 250,000, maybe it was 248,000, and Celtic had a turnover of £67 million, pretty decent. Roll the clock forward, and in the year 2018-2019, Celtic lost out to AEK Athens in the Champions League qualifiers. The turnover of £83 million. So by my arithmetic, that was an additional £16 million you put on a turnover over the course of 15/16 years. And guess what? The chief executive got paid £3.5 million. How good is that? So the chief executive, his salary inflation way outstripped Celtic's turnover. Put a little bit of context in there. In 2016, there was a report that HMRC had caught some naughty boys out on a film scheme. According to media reports, among those involved were Peter Lowell, Martin O'Neill, Chris Sutton, Neil Lennon, and others. So at that time, a few guys got hit with a very high tax bill. And in 2018-2019, Peter Lowell got £3.5 million out of Celtic on reduced turnover down to £83 million, and that involved Europa League football. And I've got a document here. I'm not sure how well it will come up on the screen. A few folk will be familiar with it. Let's see. Subject: Rangers, strictly private and confidential. Date: Thursday, 26th July 2012. At 21:01, so that was it, just after 9 o'clock on a Thursday night, and that email had to be replied to. So quite a few Celtic-minded folk, internet bampot and the rest, will be familiar with that. But we know one man that never seen that email. He was asked about it at the 2019 Celtic AGM. He wasn't really. He was asked if anyone at Celtic had been involved in the five-way agreement of 2012. Ho, 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 I haven't even seen it. They laughed. And all the old farts at the AGM laughed along with him. Peter wasn't back at the AGM for a couple of years. The following year, it was COVID. The following year, he wasn't around. And then in 2023, AGM back again. And the same anti-establishment pesky shareholder asked a similar question. It was just to check that Peter had got things right at the 2019 AGM, and he stuck with it. Of course he hadn't read the five-year agreement. Why would you bother reading an agreement which gave your one realistic domestic competitor various advantages in legislation? But he's gone, or has he? We've heard that one before. Strangely, 3:45, I was halfway up the stairs when I got a text from my brother letting me know about it. And then by 3:48, there was a statement on the Celtic website. And it wasn't just any old statement. It was full of anger, bitterness, pointing the finger, pity, violence out. And let me just say, anyone threatening people, any over-the-top abuse, shouting in people's faces, etc., or even getting your door kicked in at 6 o'clock in the morning with Police Scotland officers outside, that is not to be encouraged. It's hurtful and it shouldn't be happening. So anyone involved in them like that. But as we know, There's been nothing whatsoever reported about it. All we have is hearsay. No reports, no arrests, no charges. That could happen in the future, but who knows what's happening. But Peter Lill is stepping down as Celtic chairman. It's been rumoured for a while. Lots of people put various reasons on it. This, that, the next thing. He was going to stand down at AGM, but the AGM appears to have been his last public hurrah, his last two fingers to shareholders and Celtic supporters, inviting Ross Desmond up. And I'd love to see what was unsaid in Ross Desmond's statement, reading it out for Dad. Well, Peter Lill cut Ross Desmond short. The heckling was nothing worse than you'd hear in the House of Commons at Westminster at question time. That was too much for Peter Lill to take, and off he ran. That was his farewell to Celtic. So, you could probably guess my thoughts on it. Delighted to see him go, but we all know it's just the first step. There's lots of other people. Basically, anyone that was appointed for Peter Lill is contributing nothing to Celtic and taking plenty from Celtic. And one of the chief baddies in that description is a current chief executive. So it's great to see one gone. The Banners were looking for three. One gone, two to go, plenty of others. But I'm sure my colleague James Forrest from the Celtic blog has got many, many thoughts on the demise and apparent disappearance of the retirement of Peter Lill. So I'll pass over to James for some thoughts.
Well, this is how the great mythology ends. It's fitting that last night went the way it did while he was absent from the stand. This whole idea that he has been taking a back seat and he's not had anything to do with Celtic's operations since he returned as chairman has been contradicted again and again and again by people from inside the club. Even the statements from Michael Nicholson and Dermot Desmond over the last 24 hours have confirmed what we all know is that Lowell played an active role in every single thing that has happened in the past couple of years since he returned. And this is no shock to any of the three of us sitting here, or really anybody. But this brings to an end the great Peter Lowell myth, because Peter Lowell has always been a myth. He's always been this much misunderstood figure. And not so much misunderstood as shamelessly spun. Now, when you've studied political communications and whatnot, and you've studied like political parties, you know who these people are. The journalist Owen Jones, he scorned some of them during the last Labour leadership election. I mean, you know, these bright young things from the parliamentary party who were supposed to be the next big thing, getting absolutely shredded by exposure to public scrutiny and hard questioning. And he said that they suffered from a derangement syndrome, which resulted in the media overhyping them. And then when they came into contact with reality, it all crumbled and they psychologically fell apart. And for a long time, I've thought about Peter Lowell in the same sort of way, because almost everything that I've read about Peter Lowell in the last 10 years plus has not stood up to the remotest scrutiny. One journalist yesterday described him as a titan. Well, in his own mind, maybe, but in the real world, not so much. He says he's going to pursue new opportunities in football. Doing exactly what? Doing exactly what? Peter Lowell's skill lies in being able to basically make the books balance. That's his skill. As a politician, he is hopeless. He has been on the UEFA executive for years, and all that has happened is that clubs like Celtic have found it harder to operate within the context of European football, because financial sustainability, of course, doesn't harm the clubs in England and places like that who get tens of millions every year in TV revenue. It impacts clubs like ours and the one across the road, although they don't seem to recognise financial gravity. But he hasn't helped us at UEFA. All the talk for years that Peter Lowell runs Scottish football, well, I would like somebody to point out what good that has done us, right? Because it has never done us any good. Refereeing reform has never taken place. Financial fair play has never been implemented. We have never seen so many clubs cutting our supporters' allocations, even though they play most of their games, even the ones involving us, in front of empty stadiums. So for all the power that Peter Law wielded in Scottish football, I don't see where the impact on us is. I don't see what good that ever did us. I don't see whatever good it did the wider game. And I can only conclude that either Peter Law had no strategic vision whatsoever, or he was hopeless at building alliances. Either way, he's a shit politician. So if he did, he's no good at UEFA, and he did, he's no good in Scottish football, then where did this idea that he runs Scottish football or ever ran Scottish football come from? Maybe it was the idea that Celtic were the people propping up Neil Doncaster. If I were him, that is not something that I would be boasting about. Propping up one of the worst, most hopeless, most absolute... I mean, if you want to talk about institutional failure, Neil Doncaster is the walking example of it. And that we've been propping him up, and we have been essentially for years, it should be a source of deep shame to everybody at Celtic and not something to boast about. So again, I don't understand what the Peter Law myth is built on. I genuinely don't. Maybe he can intimidate some journalists by picking up the phone and shouting the ball at them, the way apparently Dermot Desmond can. But other than that, what it's based on what? It's based on Celtic success. Well, let's trace that. Because we've all done the deep dive into Law. We all know what Law actually is. We all know what his actual influence has been. When you look at Peter Law's first 10 years, we were trading titles with the Ibrox club nearly every step of the way. And although they were on their knees financially and the bank was breathing down their neck, they won the last three league titles before they went out of business. The last three, it's a historical fact. And they were on the way to winning the fourth when the collapse started. That's Peter Law's stage one legacy. Peter Law's stage two legacy was based on that club collapsing. Peter Law's first two managerial decisions in that spell were atrocious. The best thing that ever happened to Celtic and what started us on the current road that we're on, or the road we've been on, whereby we were winning doubles and trebles with regularity year on year on year, started with the hiring of Dermot Desmond. And what happened there? These people on our board, led by the great genius, could not keep that guy in the building. They chased him out the building. And then he reappointed Neil Lennon. And we know how that ended. He at least had the common decency to step back after the Lennon thing failed. And it was the best thing he ever did, and probably the only good thing he did in the whole of those 10 years. And almost as soon as it became clear that Ange was going to rebuild the whole club again, he could not wait to come back and bask in the reflected glory of that, even leaking to his buddies in the press that he was the one who ultimately made the decision. Of course, he takes over a Celtic where we've enjoyed two transfer windows of unparalleled success, which have put tens of millions of pounds onto the value of the squad. By the time he arrives, though, his son's been in the building 6 months, running recruitment. So almost as soon as Daddy and Junior are running the show, we have a transfer window where we sell two key players, Jananovic and Giakoumakis, and both for absurdly low prices, considering what those guys were worth. And this is the pattern. So we hire Rodgers again, right? Now, bear in mind, right, the one who logs first tasks as chairman, back on the board and back in an executive capacity, right, a proper executive capacity. One of their first tasks was to convince Ange to sign a long-term deal, and they failed, and they couldn't get it done. So they go out and they reappoint Brendan, and then screw Brendan in his first summer, and then don't let him properly strengthen in the winter. But Brendan's good enough and gets it done anyway. Second year, they complain bitterly about the signings that Brendan makes, but those signings take us to the brink of a treble, which we're losing penalties, and get us to the Bayern Munich game. How did they reward Brendan for that? By spending an entire summer undermining him all over again, right? So they've had the best manager that the club has had since Steen in the building twice, and they have not been able to work properly with the guy. And he's left. He's walked out twice. They couldn't get asked to sign a long-term deal. He's hired Lennon twice. It's no great surprise to see Martin O'Neill popping up in the dugout for a second time in Lowell's tenure. This is who the guy is. Everything that we've been told about Peter Lowell, the genius, is built on a myth. It's built on bullshit. Lowell is the great bullshit artist. This is the greatest bullshit story ever told. It's preposterous to think that this guy has gotten by so many years on myth-making. But he has. And I'm glad he's gone. Maybe now we can analyse and assess his time at Celtic properly and without recourse to all the nonsense that we've had to listen to for years about how superb he is as a leader and superb he is as a man. Look at the state of our club right now. You can trace every single bit of the trouble we're in right now back to his door. Cronyism, nepotism, run like a fucking bowling club. All of it tracks back to him. All of it. And I hope this time we have seen the last of him. And it's no great shock that he goes in a thing of spite and criticising fans. It was always going to end like that. It never had a happy ending. He never gets his statue in the car park, much as he thinks he's entitled to one. That day will never come. I'll chain myself here.
Yeah, you need to put up some barriers around that to keep the anti-establishment plebs away. James, I agree with 90% of you there, but I don't think Lowell has ever had any role in UEFA. He's been in the European Club Association, which is a talking shop, which is the House of Lords. It's for non-entities, lots of folk to talk, have conventions, meet up, produce strategies, work in papers, blah, blah, blah.
Representation on it.
And does absolutely hee-haw. A couple of weeks ago, Paddy Stewart got voted onto some committee at what the European club was. I think it's called the Football Clubs or something or other. It's been renamed, but it was the ECA for long enough. While he was at Motherwell, Alan Burrows had some role on it as well.
Thank you, so, exactly.
Again, it's the usual spin. Because it's European football, it's the UEFA executive, and Peter's a big hitter, and Peter's respected, and Peter did this, that, next thing. Peter did hee-haw. On his watch, when he started off, I think there was two teams from the top five or six leagues within the Champions League. Over the course of time, there's now four teams from those leagues in the Champions League, and in some cases you can get five. And this season there's six English clubs in the Champions League. So on Peter's watch, the great man, the man that was throwing his weight around UEFA, the Scottish Champions had to go through one qualifier. It's pretty simple, it's pretty straightforward, pretty easy to get through, but he's got a bit of form on Champions League qualifiers. This season, there's six English teams in the Champions League, so let's nail that amongst many myths. But Eric, you were always of the opinion that Peter never really left the building. He just extended working from home during that awkward period of July 2021 to January 2023. He had his boy in there soon enough, working on some great deals. Again, there's a hell of a lot of revisionism on about Mark Lowell. Apparently, he brought in this. Mark Lowell, the only decent player brought into Celtic on Mark Lowell's watch was Alistair Johnson. You can search through it. Summer 2023, off the top of my head, Haksabanovic, Paul, not Barrado, Alexandro Bernabei, Benji Seagrace, goalkeeper, etc., etc., all come and gone, cost the club money, contributed very little. So I'll pass over to Eric to pay wholesome tribute to, fortunately for you, Eric, you didn't have the misfortune to meet the man. Myself and James had met him once or twice. Not pleasant experiences, listening to him cursing and swearing his way through meetings, off the record, of course. What's your take on the demise of Peter Lowell and his nasty exit yesterday from Celtic? Fingers crossed it was an exit.
Well, first of all, I'd say I'm appearing for the first time on our podcast with a celebratory beer, and I'm going to take a sup of that now because it's just one, and it's one person that we've managed to get out. There are more to go, but I'm having a beer this evening in light of what's happened. So anyway, well, two hard acts to follow there, guys, because to be fair, you've covered an awful lot. There's not much that I can actually fill in these gaps, you know, that I have to. But I think I'll go back to the time during the COVID season when everything went pear-shaped and we had the whole Dubai debacle. And I always thought at that time, after that particular debacle and the mealy-mouthed apology from Lawwell on television, you know, on Celtic TV, I always thought that his position was untenable after that. And I thought that he did the decent thing at that time. And it seemed to me at that time like it was a hollow victory that he left. All of us still had a lot of, what would you say, ill feeling towards him because of what had gone on, you know, especially, I suppose, just before that, what had gone on with Brendan Rodgers, the appointment of Neil Lennon and the way that that happened, the fact that there was no real recruitment process once again in the terms of chasing a manager down. They said they had, you know, done a world-class recruitment process and they managed to appoint Neil Lennon in the showers. So I felt it was a bit of a hollow victory. I had wanted it for so long. I then, when it happened, I didn't feel all that great about it because we were in such shit at that time. You know, so I just felt it was a small chink of light in a fairly disastrous season during the COVID season. That it has occurred again when the club is at rock bottom. And I'll go so far as to say as the club is in a worse position now that it has ever, I think it's the worst position it's ever been in my view, in my lifetime anyway. I don't even think 1994 was as bad because I guess the silver lining to 1994 was Fergus and what happened after that and something good came of it. I just don't know what the silver lining is going to be this time around. And Lawwell going, I believe it's a victory for the collective. It's definitely a victory for the collective. It actually happened quicker than I thought it would happen. I honestly thought that if of all the guys in Celtic Park that were going to dig their feet in or dig their heels in, it would be this guy. But I refrained from saying it last night in my article, but I'm going to say it. Rats always run from a sinking ship. And I think Peter Lawwell views Celtic as a sinking ship at the moment. And I discussed the other night there when we had the podcast on Monday that I reckon that there were factions, you know, developing amongst the board and certain people were out for themselves. And I believe that Peter Lawwell has looked at the shit show that is now unfolding at Celtic Park. He knows it's a sinking ship and he's running from it because he doesn't want to be associated with it when it actually really does go pear-shaped. And I think we're 100% on a road to a really, really bad situation if things continue the way they are. But I'll go back to what you said earlier on there, Joe, about him, you know, about the turnover of 83 million and he actually took 3.5 million of that away in a salary. At that time, I believe I'm correct in saying this, he was the highest paid CEO in the UK. That was
In sport, yeah. More than anyone in the EPL.
More than anybody in the EPL. And when there's people, you know, when there's people who are saying, oh, you know, this guy's legacy is amazing. And as James said, the myth that has been created about this guy. When you think, like the only thing that I think of about Peter Lawwell or the only thing I associate with Peter Lawwell is greed. And the want for more and more and more. So much so that even when he went and worked from home, which I have in good authority, he did, as we know, we've discussed that many times before because I heard it from the horse's mouth. The fact that, as you said, as you both alluded to, that he had to get his piece of the glory when Ange Postecoglou became a success. That was just, he couldn't resist it. He could not resist coming back and trying to take the limelight. And that was 100% the, you know, the all the form of an egotist, you know, who wants to get the, wants himself in the limelight. And Peter Lawwell really did. But I honestly believe another time as well that he during his tenure that irritated me was when he was the de facto director of football, or you know what I mean, the way that he actually influenced the signings that went on, Marion Schved, all of the kids that came over from America, all of these crap signings that were brought in under his watch and enforced and foisted on the manager in his first tenure, on Brendan Rodgers during his first tenure at the club. He was behind all that. He was interfering in everything. He had fingers in every pie at Celtic. And he was just a meddler. That's literally what he was. He was a meddler. And I honestly believe that during that time when he was working from home, everybody was consulting with him on what was going on with Don McKay. Everybody was ringing him and saying, you know, this is what Don McKay is doing now. This is what Don McKay is doing now. He didn't get that, you know, the way he signed that player. We wouldn't do things like that when you were around, Peter. You know, everything. I think an awful lot of Don McKay, I'd say, if he was to ever tell his story, a lot of what he probably heard from the other board members was, well, Peter wouldn't do it that way. You know, and I think that an awful lot of the influence behind Don McKay being, you know, vacating the building, I would wager that Peter Lawler was heavily involved in that. So, I mean, when we look at where we are now, it's a small victory. It's a small victory. It's in the overall scheme of things, it's never going to be a victory until they're all gone. But for me, I do feel a lot better than I did during the COVID season, because I believe it's the start of something, because I don't think that the drive was there during that season amongst the fan base to really drive this home and to really get them all out. I know they wanted, you know, we all wanted Lawwell to kind of leave at that time because of what had happened and how bad the season had gone. But the drive that's behind us now, the Celtic Fans Collective, the, you know, all the fan groups that have come together, I just think that ultimately these guys, they're all headed one direction. Whether it happens this side of the new year or in the new year, but I'd say the next to go is Nicholson, because he has firmly nailed his colours to Wilfred Nancy, based on his interview yesterday and based on what's happened today. So, and true to form, as Peter Lawwell departed the building, he had to have his shot, his pot shot at the fan base. And that just epitomises Peter Lawwell in all his glory. He could not give any credit to the people who paid his salary. You know, ultimately, all the money that he took out of Celtic, he would not have taken only for the fans. So to have a parting shot at them, it was like Mark McGowan, our other writer on Read Celtic, said today, as he was walking out the door, it's like standing there blaming somebody else for murder while pointing at somebody else while he has the gun in his hand. You know, so it's the beginning of the end, I hope, of this dynasty. I don't think you could even title it a dynasty. coming crashing down. And I believe the decision to retain Nancy will ultimately be the finishing of them all. And despite everything that has gone wrong under Wilfred Nancy, when the time comes, which I have no doubt it will come, I'll thank him for taking them with him, because if results continue the way they're going, I don't see them surviving afterwards either. Their credibility is going to be shot, absolutely shot. But yeah, I'm having my beer tonight in celebration of Peter Lawwell vacating the building finally. Well, he hasn't vacated just yet, and we won't know for sure if he vacates for good, guys. He could still be working from home. Never trust. You know, because one thing you'd say about Peter Lawwell, he was never afraid to tell a lie. So that's one thing for sure. But I won't miss him. I absolutely will not miss him. I just hope that when the whole rank and file of them are cleared out and the new people come in, that they learn lessons from the last 20 years. I hope to God they do. But I do believe it's the beginning of the end, and he's the start of it.
Well said. Well, that's us lasted 29 minutes and not a mention of John McGinn or Yosef Malumba. Fancy that. Eric, you touched on something there. Let's not forget Manny Perez and Andrew Gutman, two guys from America that didn't have a work permit to play soccer in the UK, but for some reason, under this fantastic leader, this incredible administrator, Celtic gave both of them contracts. One of them played two pre-season games in Austria, so they could play for Celtic outside of the UK. So that sort of sums up the chaos. And again, not to mention John McGinn and Yosef Malumba. But There is another story running just now. Getting over at Sky Sports News to see if we get any updates. Nothing at all, but there's something very strange going on. So the surprise of absolutely no one, Celtic lost to Dundee United last night, 2-1. He had an incredible first half, brilliant football, Brazil 1970, ran out of steam, Dundee United, 3 wins this season. Sounds familiar, a bit like St Mirren. 3 wins in the SPFL, scored 2 goals in 3 minutes, and Celtic lose again. 4 in a row for Wilfried Nancy. First time Celtic have lost 4 consecutive games since 1978. A horrific season where they finished 5th in the league, qualified for the Anglo-Scottish Cup, and Jock Stein left at the end of the season. So that could be a podcast for another time. But 4 defeats now, and walking down the touchline last night, I thought Nancy was beaten. I thought he was going to announce his resignation, but by the time he reached the cameras, he was waffling away, Phil Clement style. Whoever interviewed him, presuming he was interviewed before getting the job, surely to God you flag up language problems. His English is 90%, which is 90% more than my French. However, you need 100% English. You need to communicate. You need to be sharp. You don't need to ask people to repeat questions. You don't need to go through a translator to be a success in a dressing room. Wilfried Nancy cannot speak good enough English to survive in football. It's a cutthroat business. It's full of angry young men with big egos, and it's cutthroat. So he's not going to last. There's a few suggestions that something might be happening then. At 12:45 today, Peter Martin came up with a tweet which seemed very, very definite. Things were happening, and it seemed only a matter of time. Over the course of time, that was shot down. Legacy media outlets, you've got their sources at Celtic, almost certainly Ian Jameson, and that source was knocking back the story. It's not happening, don't know where it came from, blah, blah, blah. But on his show, PLZ Soccer, at 3 o'clock today, Peter Martin was standing by it. He was still strong on it, but looking down, it's 7 o'clock now, and Wilfried Nancy is still the Celtic manager. Strange things going on at Lennox Town today. Paolo Bernardo was put up to speak to the media to discuss the game with Aberdeen and things in general. Bizarrely, last night at Tannadice, Wilfried Nancy had a second media conference, which was embargoed, and that will appear maybe 10:30 tonight, maybe 10:30 on Friday to discuss the game against Aberdeen. So we're not the only 3 Celtic fans that are hoping that Wilfried Nancy is nowhere near the game against Aberdeen on Sunday. We all know there's only one man that makes major decisions at Celtic, so there could have been a board meeting today. There might not have been a board meeting this morning. Who knows? Wilfried Nancy was pictured at training this morning at Lennox Town. He didn't appear in Celtic social media pictures from training at Lennox Town. So it's a typical mess, a fudge, as usual we get with Celtic. So, James, what's your take? Where are we standing? Is there pressure on the manager? Is there people on the Celtic board wanting rid of him after 14 days, 4 defeats and horrific media conferences where no one can make head nor tail of what he's trying to do, much like the players in the dressing room? Where do you think things stand? Live tonight at 7 o'clock, the day after losing to Dundee United 4 in a row, and 2 and a bit days before playing Aberdeen on Sunday.
Right. Well, I'll talk about Nancy first, but I want to come back on one thing in relation to Wall and this whole fiasco. Earlier this afternoon, I put up a piece about Nancy, where I compared him to Herbert Sobel from Band of Brothers. Now, if you've read Stephen Ambrose's book, you'll know that the characterization of him in the show is entirely different than the actual man himself. All the things that he was bad at, he was equally bad at in real life as he was in the show. But Sobel was also quite an accomplished guy and quite smart and exceptionally good at training soldiers to go to war. But when Sink realized, Sink, who was the commander of the commander of the parachute infantry, when he realized that Sobel was never going to be a battlefield commander, he replaced him instantaneously. instantaneously, even though it made him look bad, it made the regiment look bad, made everybody in the upper echelon look bad. And what made it worse is that he did it after NCOs and Easy Company had gone and told him, we won't follow this guy into battle. So it looked like insubordination, everything else, right? And to the outside observer, it might have looked like he was bowing to pressure from his own soldiers, right? But he didn't give a shit about any of that cosmetic nonsense. He made a command judgment. He said, this guy is unsuitable. I don't care how it's brought to my attention. We're going to replace him before he does real and lasting damage. And we don't have leaders like that at the club. I said that that is one of the great examples of executive leadership that you will ever get. He disciplined the soldiers who brought the story to him. But he took action on it anyway because he realised, however they had got there, that they were right. And we have leaders right now who would rather see this club go through a prolonged and painful period of this nonsense than actually act and look like they made a mistake in the first place. They know it's a mistake. Everybody knows it's a mistake. But they would rather carry on inflicting pain on the club than admit that and do something about it. It's disgusting. It hangs the guy out to dry for a start because he's nowhere near capable of doing this job. This is a guy who can't tell the difference between his Twitter profile and his WhatsApp. This is a guy who thinks Kyle is in Scotland. He's miles out of his depth here. And they are leaving him in position only so they don't look bad for having to admit they made a mistake and having to take some leadership responsibility and replace him. It is shameful. I don't know what's happening behind the scenes. I know that they are terrified of the prospect of going to this game at the weekend. I know that the thought of a Celtic Park filled to the rafters with people who loathe and detest them scares the living daylights out of them. Even that's not enough for them to do what they know has to be done here because they will look bad doing it. It's unbelievable. This is what we have instead of leaders. This is what we have running our club. It's no wonder that people, even people in the media who fell for the Lowell myth and to a certain extent still believe the bollocks about Desmond being this great visionary leader. It's no wonder even they're starting to look at this and say, this is a goddamn mess. Who is running the show here? How has this been allowed to happen? Well, these are the questions that we've been asking for a long time. So it's, you know, welcome to where we are. But my God, I've never seen the club in a mess like this. Everybody knows this is over. Everybody knows it. The people running Celtic know it's over. But they don't want to do anything about it because they would have to admit they got a ring in the first place. I can't believe it. It's disgusting. And here's the thing now that I come back today about Lowell. If I don't say this now, I might never say it. So I'm going to say it now. To hell with it, right? The whole debate around the fan protests treats us as though we are infantile and stupid. And I don't want to give credence to that any longer. We live, Joe, you and I anyway, right? Eric, you're well out of here, man. Fair play to you. But Joe, you and I live in a very dangerous city full of extremely dangerous and crazy people. And we're not talking about a company executive here that simply treats its customers like shit, because a lot of companies do that. But these guys have to live here the same as us. They have to walk the streets the same as us. You can meet these people at taxi ranks waiting for trains. I bumped into Michael Nicholson twice at Central Station in the last 12 months. So these people live among us. They go about their business among us. And to treat people in this city with the condescension and the arrogance and the elitism and the sneering contempt that these people do, it's fucking stupid. It's stupid and it's dangerous. And we're not just talking about, as I said, a company that treats its customers like shit. We're talking about football supporters here. We're talking about people whose investment in the club they care about is not just financial, but it's emotional and it's spiritual and it's deep and it's rooted and it's familial and it goes across boundaries. Like, this is where your friends are. This is where you, you know, your whole life is wrapped up in this. And for them to treat people like that with the contempt and the condescension and the arrogance of the day is reckless beyond belief. Beyond belief. I'm not saying that what they are allegedly having to put up with is right. It is not right. Nothing makes it right. If your response to this is to target a man and his family, you're a piece of shit, right? And there's no excuse for it. But let's not pretend that this is some... Let's not pretend that this couldn't happen and that it won't happen and that it doesn't happen. It's the way they act and the way they treat other people borders on lunacy when you live in a city like this. And we are pretending that these people have not in some way created these circumstances. They are solely responsible for the circumstances we find ourselves in and for the circumstances they find themselves in. I am not saying it is right. It's disgusting. It's deplorable. And I hope the cops catch anybody who's involved in it and they go to jail for a very long time. But let us not pretend that the way they behave is not reckless and foolish and invites insane people to do insane stuff. And we are kidding ourselves on if we don't acknowledge that. Nobody wants to acknowledge it, so I might as well acknowledge it.
James, I'll just make one point there before I let you come back to that. These are the guys who want to get, you know, who always wanted to retain Old Firm Inc. These are the guys who wanted to get into bed with the city across the road. And what way does the city across the road view its fan base? It's much of the same, really, isn't it?
Right, to clear up some little points, I am no fan of Peter Martin, absolutely not. He gave the game away when Brendan Rodgers was coming back in 2023. He absolutely went off and won. I think it was about a 7 o'clock in the morning tweet where he gave the game away. So Peter Martin was very hostile to Brendan Rodgers. You can all guess why. And Peter Martin, PLZ, were not welcome, weren't on the invite list while Brendan Rodgers was manager of Chelsea. However, Peter Martin would not have tweeted at 12:45 today about talks going on for Wilfred Nancy to leave Celtic after four matches if he didn't get that from a very good source. True, that tweet would have helped bring more viewers into PLZ at 3 o'clock today, but Peter Martin did not pick that up off some random WhatsApp group that was flying around. There's plenty of them going about, plenty of rumours, this, that, and the next thing. But I am no fan of Peter Martin, absolutely not. However, he did not tweet that on the back of hee haw. It didn't come from fresh air. He would have got that from a very good source. Ultimately, there's only one man that makes decisions at Celtic, and there's maybe one or two men that he confides in with those decisions. So Peter Martin got that from a good source. It wasn't as silly o'clock, 7 a.m. morning tweet when he let rip about all his dislike for Brendan Rodgers, the most successful Celtic manager post-Jock Stein. Martin O'Neill did a great run as interim manager, seven wins out of eight. Got his to cup final, which we managed to throw away. But statistically and anything else, Brendan Rodgers is the most successful post-Jock Stein. And unfortunately, it'll be a very, very, very long time before another Celtic manager is competing in the Champions League, and even longer before they win 12 points in the Champions League. But Eric, what's your take on current events, the mobility, what's happening with Wilfred Nancy, who's briefing against who, what's going on, and how it's going to tumble out in the short term?
Well, I think for starters, you've got to look at it from the perspective that Wilfred Nancy is about to take on Aberdeen at the weekend, okay? And I'm going to put it out there now, and I'm not doing a Hugh Keevans on it. We are going to lose to Aberdeen. And I base that on what I've seen in the previous four games up to now. We cannot, if a team scores a goal against us, we utterly capitulate. And that is what we've done in the last four games. We've just completely capitulated. There's been no sort of... There doesn't seem to be... Like, if you remember the fight that the club used to have if they went a goal behind or they were pushing to try and win a game late on, we always pushed and pushed and pushed. But the problem is right now, under Nancy, there's no push whatsoever. It's just complete and utter capitulation if we have a goal against us. The heads go down. We're like headless chickens. We're running around. And as I said in the article that I left this evening, after the second goal went in last night at Tannadice, we resemble something like a hen coop when a fox gets into it. Just utter chaos. That's all it looked like to me. That was the way my brain tried to actually quantify it. And that was the picture I came up with. You see, the problem here is now, if he goes into Sunday, and I'm saying we're going to lose to Aberdeen because we are, based on what we're seeing at the moment, okay? He is now matching a record that goes back as far as 1953 and Jimmy McGrory's time at the club. The last time that Celtic lost five games in a row was back in 1953. So the board, as a mercy to Wilfried Nancy, because they're setting him up to become the most infamous manager in the history of our club. And I don't think that's fair on the guy. I genuinely don't think that's fair on the guy, because I don't think that he's a bad guy. And James wrote a very, very interesting article earlier on today about, you know, nice guys. And, you know, it's all very well being a nice guy and a decent human being and a decent father. But if you're tasked to do a job and you're incapable of doing that job, you shouldn't be there. And I think Wilfried Nancy has proven categorically that he is incapable of doing the job at Celtic. Now, I admire the guy's tenacity and I admire his belief in his philosophy. And that might be a huge, huge benefit to another club. But it's not benefiting Celtic. And it's not benefiting Celtic because we simply do not have the players at this moment in time to exact the kind of formation that he wants to use. And he is not willing to budge on that. And what you have then is a situation where we have people in the boardroom who are at a point where they're caught between a rock and a hard place because they have to back this guy. They're desperately, desperately hoping that he turns it around and he proves to everybody that he was the genius that they believed he was all along. And they're hanging everything on this. They're holding out this desperate hope that this is going to happen. And it's not. It's not going to happen. And you see, the problem is they're craving vindication on the basis that that will happen. But they're not going to get vindicated. And what you're going to happen is, or what you're going to have happening is, we're going to lose to Aberdeen. Then we're going to go to Livingston. And we're going to get absolutely pulverized there because we know what they play like. They'll run amok. And then the next thing, we have the Ibrox side on our doorstep. And that's the icing on the cake. And that then, guys, that is eight defeats on the trot. Unthinkable, you would say. But that's the worst thing about it. It is actually believable that that could happen. And that's a scary fucking prospect, like. And this board is willing to let that happen because in the vain hope that this guy will turn that around. Now, it's bad enough we've lost four games on the trot. If we lose five on the trot, six, seven, eight on the trot, season's gone. It's absolutely gone. It's as good as gone now anyway. Because under current circumstances, I do not see us turning it around if we stick with this guy. And then you go into January on foot of having lost to the Ibrox side at home, which will be utterly humiliating considering the state that they're in at the moment. And you're letting Paul Tisdale fucking organise the recruitment to back this vision. What fucking vision? I mean, what vision does Wilfried Nancy should be going to fucking Specsavers if this is his vision? You know, because to me, it's catastrophic. That was catastrophic last night on the pitch. And the problem is, like you said, James, earlier on, and you know, in the podcast on Monday, you know, if he loses the dressing room, it's all over. I don't think he's actually had the dressing room to be in a position to lose it. He doesn't have the dressing room. The dressing room has not been convinced by this man from day one. And that's the biggest, that's the fundamental problem here. The players do not believe in his philosophy. And if the players don't believe in his philosophy, he is flogging a dead horse. He can be pushing his philosophy on them all day long. If they don't believe in it, they're not going to follow it. And that's what I can see unfolding every game that this guy has, you know, every from every team he's put out on the field of play. That's what I've seen unfold. These guys do not believe in what he's trying to do. And if they don't believe in what he's trying to do, he is doomed. It's that simple. He's absolutely doomed. And the problem is, if the board stick with this, as I said, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. But they're pinning their hopes on him turning it around. Because they know if he doesn't, they're fucked. It's that simple. Because their credibility is shot to shit now anyway. But if we lose the next, right up till, you know, the game against the Ibrox side, if we lose all those games, they will not be able to stay at Celtic. It's just an impossibility. They can't. Michael Nicholson saying he's backing him all the way and he sees his vision and he sees, you know, he wants to back the project, all that kind of stuff. They're going to look like utter incompetence. Well, they're going to look like the utter incompetence that they are. So it's a lose-lose. It's a losing situation for everyone. It's a losing situation for the board. It's a losing situation for Nancy. It's a losing situation for us, the fan base. And it's a losing situation for Celtic as a club, as a whole. And this is the path that we're on. Unless the board has got the balls to enact a mercy killing and just tell the guy, if we lose on Sunday, that's it. We can't put you for your own, you know, well-being and your own sanity. We can't put you through this anymore. We're actually, employers, it is their job to ensure his well-being. And by pushing him to continue in this role, in the way that he is working in this role at the moment, they're not looking after his well-being. They're not putting his well-being and his mental health first. And they're doing him a disservice if they retain him in this position. If he continues, if he loses on Sunday, which I have no doubt he will, because Aberdeen are going to beat, they smell blood. Everybody smells blood. Jim Goodwin smelled blood last night. And I mean, let's be honest about it. Dundee United got two chances and they took them. And then they just absorbed everything we threw at them because we were hapless. All Aberdeen have to do is score once at Celtic Park on Sunday and we will fold. So I don't see a good ending to this for anyone who's involved in it now. I just don't. And I don't understand why they believe there is a possibility of a good ending in this. And I genuinely, as a human being, I feel so sorry for Wilfred Nancy, because it's a lot of it isn't his fault. Because he was brought in under shit circumstances. He was brought in when the team has been acid stripped. Brendan Rodgers couldn't even get a tune out of them. Martin O'Neill did get a tune out of them, but we know for a fact that there was games there where it was touch and go, you know, and we got that rub of the green. We got that stroke of luck. We got that late goal. We scored one goal against Dundee and we managed to defend for the rest of the game and keep Dundee out when they had plenty of chances. It was seat of your pants stuff, you know, with Martin O'Neill too. Martin O'Neill just put, you know, he injected a bit of fortitude into the players and got them to believe in themselves. These guys don't believe in anything at the moment, and that's ultimately the biggest problem of it all. They don't believe in Wilfred Nancy. They don't believe in his philosophy, and they don't believe that he is the guy who's going to take them forward. And that's just the reality here. We are not winning any games under this guy. And I never, in all my years of supporting Celtic, ever thought I'd be saying we are not winning games. Because even when things were bad in the 90s, we still won games, you know. We didn't, like I said, he's matching a record set by Jimmy McCrory in 1953, if we don't win, you know, on Sunday. So I don't know. I just it doesn't end well. No matter what way you slice and dice it, it doesn't end well.
Yep. So it's very difficult to read things. I mean, what sort of conversation do you think is going on between Nicholson, Mackay and Wilson and possibly Peter Lyle, since he's still normally the chairman? I mean, none of these guys have got any clout. None of them know anything really about football. All they do is wait for instructions from Dermot Desmond. Who knows what time zone Dermot Desmond is in? He could well be in. Could well be in the Caribbean. Could well be in North America. Who knows what time his tee off was it today? So this might all have been passing him by, and he might be picking up with it late afternoon, which is very late over here. So it's impossible to read. But Peter Martins, I say, I'm no fan of his, but he did not tweet that on the back of fresh air. He got that from somewhere fairly serious. So we're going to finish up for tonight. Thanks again for everyone that's joined us in this impromptu semi-regular emergency podcast. We will be back on Monday unless something bonkers happens tomorrow or Saturday. No, I think we'll hold back till Monday. We'll have a special festive fun edition. Not. But I'll leave the final word to James. James, you can sign off. And thanks for everyone's looked in. Great numbers the other night. If you've not subscribed, please do. And leave a comment. The feedback's always interesting.
400 tonight to go on the live show after an emergency show, so that's pretty good. Semi unannounced.
On you go, James.
Turn your mic on, James.
They've nobbled you.
I said nobody knows how this ends except that it's not going to end well. It's how long it takes for them to reach the conclusion that most fans have already reached. And as I say, I think inside the walls, everybody already knows that this was a tremendous mistake. And the only thing that's keeping them in a job right now is not because anybody's got any faith in them, but because nobody wants to own up and admit that they screwed this up. And that's the worst possible reason for leaving someone in a job. Eric, you're 100% right. It's impossible not to feel sorry for this guy because he has been done up like a kipper. He's been dropped into a situation that was not of his making to take over a team that even a seasoned manager like Rodgers couldn't get a tune out of. And he's out of his depth. The media is having a feeding frenzy. And fan anger is now turned on him when it should still be focused on the people who hired him. And that was the sad element of it the other night. Fans who travelled up to that game and put up with that horrible evening, I'm not going to give them stick for it, right? But it was the most misplaced outburst of anger I think I've heard in a long time, because it deserved to be targeted at the board more than the guy who is floundering in this ocean of shit that we're in. I have only one hope for the weekend, is that if it goes badly, it goes so badly that no matter what they might tell themselves inside the walls, that they can ride it out and that they can, that somehow this guy might turn it around, that they'll see how impossible it is. I think the atmosphere on Sunday is going to be horrendous. No matter what happens on the pitch, it's going to be horrendous. But if it's another defeat, it's going to be off the charts. And these people might need escorted out of the building by police and by the fucking army if it comes to that. Am I right in saying that the next home game after that is the one against our City friends?
It is.
Well, can you even imagine what the atmosphere is going to be like that day? And the more I think about it, the more I think that they either no let it get as far as Sunday before they do what has to be done, or Sunday will be so hostile and so horrendous that they'll realise that they cannot possibly leave them in the dugout for that game, because the atmosphere will be tough enough as it is, and it will be positively toxic if he is still in the dugout. It is difficult to see any positive from this at all. Law is gone, and we are all happy about that. And whatever some people in the comments might think, this is a full vindication of the collective, and it's a full vindication of fan pressure. And not even the kind of fan pressure that the club is alleging, but just the relentless grinding down of these people. And it's not even close to finished yet. Because as long as Nicholson is there, as long as Mackay is there, as long as Desmond and Sons think that they can just run the club the way they see fit, this will go on and on and on and on. There is a great film, a great Danny DeVito movie called The War of the Roses. It's about a divorce case involving Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. And DeVito is in the movie and he plays Douglas's lawyer. And he goes to Douglas at one, he goes to DeVito at one point and he lays out his big plan for winning. And DeVito says to him, there is no winning here. There are only degrees of losing. And that is where our board of directors is right now. Whether they realize it or not, they're not going to ride this out. They're not going to see this through. The summer changed everything. I don't know how many times I need to say it and repeat it. The summer changed everything. The second you deliberately undermine the manager of Celtic and deprive him funds and therefore deprive this club of funds, you have no more right to sit in that dugout and pretend you've got the club's best interest at heart. When you take the piss out of fans, when you piss all over fans at the AGM, you have no more right to claim that you have this club's best interest at heart. There are pictures online tonight of Chris Mackay, allegedly in the midst of a firestorm of threats and intimidation, smirking and taking pictures of fans. Right? That's who these people are. And even now, in the midst of what they're claiming is a campaign of threats and intimidation, they cannot help but sneer at us. I don't know how they think this ends, but there is no winning here, only degrees of losing. They are done already. They're finished. They're beaten. This was over before it even started. The minute fans got engaged and fans started seeing that they have agency in this and that we can determine what the future of the club is, these people were done. The only thing left to decide is the manner in which they go. And they can do it as men, and they can walk out the door with their heads held high, or they can do what the chairman has just done. And they can snipe and pot shot and bitch on their way out the door. But one way or another, they are all going, every one of them. We will win this. It was always going to be this way. And the only thing they have left is to scorch the earth. And you know what? That doesn't help them and it doesn't help us. But that's the only move they have left. They can burn this club to the ground rather than leave it somehow secure for the next people to take it over. And that's the only choice they've got. They won't win this. They can't win this. And the sooner they realise it and the sooner they act accordingly, the better off it'll all be. Law has made his choice. I do not like the man, but he has made the right choice, even if he frames it for all the wrong reasons. Nicholson, Mackay, you're next.
Right, I'm going to steal the last word. Well done, the collective, guys. Who could have imagined that beginning of September, 100 you got together, put together seven questions, and Celtic have absolutely crumbled on the back of that. So it's the final weekend before Christmas. Look after your friends and family, and don't forget, not another penny. Cheers.
Just one thing before we go, guys. Predictions for Sunday. Nope. I will say 2-1 to Aberdeen.
Who cares?
James?
Aberdeen will be using Sunday. I've no even get sliced out for it.
Okay, well, look, we'll reconvene on Monday, guys, and we will see where things are, what the state of play is by Monday. We can be sure it'll be interesting anyway. That's for sure. I'll talk to you then, guys. Good luck. Yep.